Good morning. Good morning to you all. Thanks to Biennale Tecnologia and Politecnico for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Paolo Morelli. I am a journalist. I work for the Turin pages of Corriere della Sera. And I write about culture, cultural policies, environment, and social issues. Well, today we are going to talk about the relationship between youth and digital with an important guest. So let me introduce Sandra Cortesi. She's the director of the Youth and Media Project at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. At Youth and Media, she collaborates closely with young people and engages with researchers in the field who share an interest in exploring innovative ways to understand, evaluate, and shape current and future social challenges emerging in the digital world. Well, just to avoid mistakes, I took this from her website. I suggest you to explore it, because you may find a lot of interesting content about the arguments we are going to talk about. Forgive me, because I'm going to list some focuses of her job, but I think this will help us to understand the importance of her research. She works on different areas of youth life, information quality and news ecosystem, well-being, risks to safety and privacy, future of work, digital skills, lifelong learning, emerging technologies and spaces for youth participation, civic engagement, and innovation. She uses to combine different methods of social science research, and she's committed to engage in research with a real-world impact and to engage in particular in participatory, multi-sectoral, interdisciplinary and global research efforts. She works closely with the Digital Asia Hub, the Global Network of Internet and Society Centers, UNICEF, and much more. So the issue is, does the digital could represent a hope for the future? The problem today is to understand how the technology could affect and stimulate the youth and how we can define what digital is. But the most important thing is to use a perspective which is able to include the youth, because politics and international organizations used to ignore it. I know that this could sound like a set phrase, and that's the reason why today we will try to go inside this field to see how researchers, companies, and institutions work in the digital world and aim to involve young people in a concrete way. So, Sandra Cortesi, the stage is yours.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Paolo. Thank you, Juan Carlos Di Martin, for the kind invitation and for inviting me to be here. I've been to Turin many times, but all pre-pandemic, so I feel like the world has changed drastically, and I'm really, really excited to be here. Thanks to all of you who came this early to this presentation on a Saturday, so I am truly grateful that you're here, and I hope together with Paolo we can make this hour as lively as possible. We're going to split it into two parts. First, I'm going to share with you some observations in terms of why I involve young people into the work of youth and media at Berkman Klein. And then in the second part, we are going to discuss how you actually do it if you feel like that's the right way to go. But I'm going to start. And for those who want to tweet or want to look at things while I present, here are just my contact details. You can also see them at the end again, but just in case you feel like doing things while I'm presenting. So just briefly, again, about me. You had the introduction already from Paolo, but I am Sandra Cortesi. I am the director of the Youth and Media Project at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society. It's a research center at Harvard University aiming to understand the impacts of digital technologies on society broadly. And within that research center, I essentially manage, together with a wonderful group of people, one team that studies the impacts of digital technology on young people. I grew up in Colombia, in Latin America, just for way of background. I then studied in Switzerland. I'm a psychologist by training, and I have been living and working in the United States for quite a long time. When I say young people, you may ask, what do you actually mean by young people? So I study and work with young people ages 12 to 18. I study young people 12 to 18 in different parts of the world. So you see essentially all the dots on this map represent the locations in which I study youth. So it's a little bit too small for Italy, but I think Italy would definitely have a dot on the map, or should have a dot on the map. This is essentially how my good days or my happy days look like. It looks very different than today. I'm okay doing presentations, but if you ask me what makes you actually happy, it is when I can do workshops or sessions, or when I simply can spend time with young people exploring important questions and issues together. So this is just to give you an impression that normally things look very different in my life. I love young people, and I'm really excited for everyone who is here today. I truly love young people, and I do think young people have a right to voice their opinion and be heard on issues that are truly important and of societal importance. But in essence, it's not the only reason why I love working with young people and why I love young people more generally. One of the other reasons why I really enjoy working with young people is that I feel like young people help me see things early and help me see things differently as part of my work at Youth and Media. What do I mean by that? Seeing things early. So when it comes to digital technology, it turns out that it's often you, young people, that are starting to use these technologies very early. Think about my first job, essentially, or my first task was to study how people were doing file sharing in the very early days, many, many years ago. Turns out, particularly young people were sharing with each other files, movies, audio, music, and the like. But think about the emergence of social media, for instance. Who do you think were the first people that started to use Snapchat or TikTok? It's often young people that start to explore these technologies as they emerge. And because they are often the first adopters of such technologies, you see immediately some of the opportunities that emerge from using these such technologies, but you also see some of the maybe complications or challenges that come from using such technologies. So they help me understand quickly what I may want to consider in order to prepare kind of myself and the group of people we are working together for issues that in a couple of months, years, maybe also be discussed more broadly as a societal issue. Sometimes it goes quicker than that, but just as a way of making an argument. The second reason why I love working with young people is because you help me see things differently. And I'm going to share in a moment what I mean by that. On this visual behind me, you just see some of the reports we have worked on that give you hopefully a sense for the types of topics we have explored at Youth and Media. So you see it goes from one of the latest ones, or the most recent one, was on augmented and virtual reality. We have done a report on artificial intelligence or on young people and the digital economy. So very much topics where you can say, we were exploring issues early in the debate. And that's the part that I think me and the whole team working behind Youth and Media has been excited about. But let's go to the three examples of how you, young people, essentially helped me see things differently as part of my work. And I'm going to share three examples. One is on privacy, one is on autonomous vehicles, and the third one is about spending time. So I'm going to start with the first one. Example number one, seeing things differently. You help me, young people help me see blind spots, things I haven't maybe considered as much. And what do I mean by that? One of the early topics we studied at Youth and Media has been privacy. I've looked into privacy thanks to Scouser and colleagues since 2006, where maybe our conceptual understanding of privacy was not as fleshed out as it is today. But what we started to see when talking to young people is that they have a different notion of privacy as a concept, that when we ask young people, do you care about privacy? The answer was always yes. But what comes to mind when you think about privacy, differently than maybe me and other adults, we were thinking about institutions and commercial entities, young people were answering the question in terms of people around them. So my privacy is important to me, and when I think about privacy, I think about it in the context of my friends, my family, my teachers. So very much an interpersonal relationship. I want to safeguard my data or share my data with people around me. And so that was, in essence, a little bit the narrative young people were using. Versus we adults were, even in the early days, were much more thinking around kind of the platforms that these types of sharing are taking place, so commercial platforms like social media platforms. And because of that, often our minds went to kind of commercial questions. And in many cases, we were looking at it globally, looking at different countries and governments, and we were thinking also in terms of those institutions and how kind of what those institutions, how they were essentially connecting to the question of young people and data sharing and privacy more broadly. So, on one hand, essentially the blind spot is that I came with a current understanding, and young people helped me understand that there is an additional way to conceptually think about it. But I think the blind spot per se in my own work happened to the question of data connected to privacy. Again, what do I mean by that? In terms of data, one way to look at data is by looking at three types of data, which is data given, data traces, and inferred data. Much of my attention at the beginning was focused on data given, meaning the data or the things you do online where you kind of voluntarily or semi-voluntarily, because it's other people sharing data about you, but I was looking at the data that was given by individuals to others or the digital space. And much of the tension was around young people oversharing information and data with the in the digital space. But actually what we all were not fully paying attention to is kind of this inferred data space. So essentially what is happening on the company side, once you share something, what are the companies doing with that? Are they collecting it? Are they aggregating it? Are they analyzing it? Are they pooling it to make profiles? And that, through conversations with young people, became very obvious that I was not paying enough attention to it, but also that maybe young people themselves were maybe, to a certain extent, less aware about it, and that us at Youth and Media, we had an additional task or goal within our research that meant translating this knowledge, particularly into educational activities and into types of outputs that would help raise awareness about this blind spot. The second example I would love to share with you is around artificial intelligence and autonomous vehicles. A couple of years ago at Berkman Klein, we got a very generous grant that helped us center-wide study the impacts of artificial intelligence on society and in that sense also on young people. So I recall this day at the office when I just came back from a meeting at MIT. We were learning about moral machines and autonomous vehicles and kind of some of the risks and ethical complications involved in that discussion. We were talking also about kind of labor, the future of work, displacement of labor, particularly drivers, questions around skilling and education. So we were trying as a group to really connect what we essentially heard from that talk at MIT to the work we were doing. And I remember I was sitting in this office, I will show you soon a picture of how that office looks like, with a group of young people, all under 18, and we were sharing about this meeting. And so I vividly remember this moment when one young person said to me, "Sandra, you are talking about autonomous vehicles, and we are people that cannot yet drive. So while I get that you are focusing on all these complexities, and I'm not saying you're not right, and that those complexities are not important, do you understand that from my perspective, this is huge, having self-driving cars, because suddenly me, I cannot drive, I can take a car and go wherever without the need to ask my parents or someone around me to essentially get me there." And so for a second I paused and said, well, I didn't consider that point of view. I was so focused on what I was looking at earlier. And so we started a whole project that asked young people about their opinions on autonomous vehicles, and we did a competition about an essay competition where we wrote stories about autonomous vehicles. And through that conversation in the office, essentially explored the whole new set of questions attached to a project we were already looking into, but from a very different angle, which I think me on my own would not have come up with. The last topic, and then I will pause so we will have a quick exchange, is this third example. As you saw from the reports that were laid out on one of the slides, much of the work focuses on very much the impacts of technology and emerging technologies on kind of young people's lives or in young people's lives. So it's, I would say to a certain extent, it's very much connected or shaped or impacted by the different technologies, the types of questions we explore and the work we do. But, so here's the but in terms of new topics. We were talking about virtual reality, artificial intelligence, and particularly during the pandemic, we were exploring how kind of, what ways young people are spending their time through the help or accompanied by these technologies. So we were looking, was here at Animal Crossing and different types of games that people played during the pandemic. We were looking at the emergence of podcasts and if podcasts is a format that young people enjoy or not. We were looking at virtual reality and looking at different glasses and to what extent some of the applications within virtual reality are exciting to young people or not. So as you can see, very much connected to the technologies themselves were the questions we explored. But in one of the conversations, again, with young people, I was essentially reminded that I pay a lot of attention to the technologies themselves. And in conversations with young people, I learned that essentially I need to also consider to see things differently. As young people were saying, look, Sandra, technologies are great, and all the things you explore in ways are interesting, but we are not so sure anymore what the added value of these technologies to our lives is, and we are actually finding more ways to not spend time online. We're trying to come up with different hobbies or different activities that actually encourage us to leave the phone in our pockets. We're trying to create new social norms amongst each other, that when we go out, maybe we almost make a deal to look at phones a little bit less. Not everyone, I'm not saying that this is for everyone the case, but some of the people in the group I was talking to. Long way of saying that I was focused on one thing and a whole new project emerged where we said, actually, something interesting is going on here. I may not fully understand it yet because I was so focused on my other questions, but this is interesting. Let's create a project around it. And let's explore and see what's going on. Who actually feels like that? Is it a subgroup of young people? Is it a larger group? What are the right additional questions we should be asking? But we created a whole new project around it that we are now focusing on and exploring at Youth and Media. So in essence, here you just see some numbers from the US that now confirms that maybe this is actually an interesting question or a worthwhile question to further explore. Not that we needed external validation, but it shows that about half of young people in the US currently say it would be, for instance, relatively easy to very easy to give up social media. Half still says it's impossible to give up social media or somewhat hard to very hard, but still, these numbers a couple of years were differently, and I think something is actually happening. But I hope through these three examples, from the question of privacy, where it helped me see a blind spot, to the question of autonomous vehicles that helped me see an existing theme from a different angle, or the question of how young people want to be spending their time, a question that I may not have considered on my own, kind of a new question that emerged. I was able to show you three examples in why I think it's fundamental to involve young people in the work we do, not as a matter of principle, but how it has helped me make the product, the research as product, much better.
Oh, companies and institutions are working in a concrete way. I got a question for you, because we can read that teens refer to those ages 13 to 17, but when you talk about young people, what is the age? Because the word young can change country by country. I am 36. In Italy, I am still considered
young.
Yes, but I don't think I am. I am inside your subject. So, who are the young people?
So, young people in my work or in Youth and Media's work are young people ages 12 to 18. That has to do because when that project was started, the Youth and Media project, 12 was relatively early to start using digital technologies. Now, today, it's we may start at 5, but so in addition of that, it is connected to systems, so the school system. So in the US, 12 to 18 is roughly middle and high school. So much of the work, while we are a research institution, is to then figure out how to impact education. And so we work very closely with schools, middle and high schools, to see what we can do about it. And we make a cut at 18, so you definitely don't fall.
I am out.
No, you're okay. Out. And some of that has to do with legal questions.
Yes.
I'm a psychologist, but I work with colleagues like Urs Gasser, who also look at these questions through a legal lens, and I think that it makes, just in many cases and countries, it makes a difference
Yes, because US is different between Italy, so it can change. Well, I think you can show us how institutions and companies are working on this issue. So
continue, essentially.
You may continue
you
to your
question. Yeah, yes. For sure. And I do hope you have a lot of questions for me, at least for the second part. Okay, so I shared with you why essentially I involve young people, or we involve young people in the research we do at Youth and Media, not just kind of for ethical reasons or because we strongly believe in it, but also why we do it because we feel it strengthens the research itself. But I'm going to share with you how you actually do it in my context, in the research or academic context, and how others do it outside of academia. So I start again with Youth and Media first, and I promised I will show you parts of our office. It's a tiny space with lots of people in it. So at Youth and Media, we embody essentially, or we strongly believe in the principle of participatory research, meaning we involve young people, 12 to 18, into every single step of the process. I shared with you earlier how, together with young people, we identify new topics or new ways to look at different topics, but we involve them also when it comes to defining methodologies, doing the field work, looking at data, writing different types of outputs together. So in every single step of the research process. We do that in many cases by inviting young people to come after school to our offices, particularly pre-pandemic. Pre-pandemic, everything was different. But young people after school would come to Youth and Media, and we would work on these issues together. But that only was available, appealing, and possible to a selective group of people, people living in the close proximity of our offices, people that felt excited to come to Harvard, or at least felt like that's something that was possible for them to do. So in many cases, after school, we try to go to where young people are. We work with a lot of after-school programs, different organizations like UNICEF that you mentioned at the beginning, that already have structures and programs in place that convene young people, where we essentially are welcomed as guests or as co-participants of those programs. It's called participatory research. You're welcome to read more about it. In addition to what we do at academia, at Youth and Media, we felt compelled to study or to explore other ways young people could be involved. And we wanted to have an answer in terms of what those other ways would actually be. So together with the ITU, we sat down and compiled 15 different ways. One was participatory research, but there are 14 other ways of how one can work as an organization with youth. And we asked young people for their opinions on these 15 models. So we surveyed them and said, which of these models would you find most valuable? It was asked in the context of the ITU, so take it a little bit with a, or look at it with a specific kind of lens. But in essence, then we explored together the four most popular models, which you see on the right side. So Youth Lab, Learning and Co-Design Spaces, Youth Boards, and Participatory Research. And in the report you see on the slide, we explain how you actually would do those four models. But the key message here is we identified 15 ways an institution can work with young people. And so there are many, many options to be explored. But here comes the second way to do it. This is a real-world example. I don't want to keep it just theoretical. So this is the example of the Tagesanzeiger in Switzerland. As you can hear from my accent, and I shared previously, I spent significant time in Switzerland. And so the Tagesanzeiger is a media company, has a large newspaper in Switzerland. And while they have a digital option for the physical newspaper, the product, the main product they were working with is still the physical newspaper. And now if I would ask you in the room here, how many of you read physical newspapers? Raise your hand. None? One? One or two? So very few in this room. So you see what the challenge was that they were confronted with. So the question was, how is this media landscape evolving through this digital transformation question, but also how are the future customers or readers of our newspaper, physically or digital, how are they changing and how do they feel about our products? And so what this company then did with my support is we created a youth lab where over the course of 3 months, every Wednesday afternoon, because that's when in Switzerland many young people have the afternoon off, we brought in a group of 30 young people with about 30 journalists and other employees within the company, from marketing to product development to advertisement. So different groups within the company with young people to explore 10 questions. Those questions range from what kind of information needs do young people have these days to what are kind of their design wishes in terms of a newspaper and how it should be laid out digitally and physically, to what types of products are young people willing to pay, how do we get them to pay for a newspaper essentially, and if they would pay for something, how would they actually do it? Through their parents, or what kind of payment models would they find interesting? Just four questions to give you a set of examples of the 10. So again, 3 months, every Wednesday afternoon, to answer 10 questions that were critical to the company. I would say it was as much value as it was for young people to be part of it. They got to learn firsthand how the company works, how journalism looks like. I think equally benefit was it for the people from the company that engaged with young people. I'm curious later about you as a journalist.
So
you know?
Curious, yes.
But I think equally valuable it was to the journalists there. They learned a ton from young people. That connects back to my first point about seeing things differently and seeing things early. And the last example, and so here's just a slide in case you want to learn more about the Tagesanzeiger Youth Lab. It's written in much detail in this report, in an article that I have written within that report. Last example I want to mention is, so I gave you an example from academia, and then the Youth Lab, I would say, sits within the company, not within the highest level of the company, even though we had senior executives participate from time to time. The question was much more focused on the product, the newspaper as a product. So it sat more within kind of journalists, product team, within that company. But the third model we are now exploring is how do you involve young people at the highest level of decision making when it comes to the development of strategies or possible implementations, strategic implementations within a company. And so what we are currently exploring is the creation of a youth board that is almost like a sounding board for the existing board of the company. So at the top of the company, there is a board. I promise you the people look friendlier than the ones on the slide, but in age, probably roughly similar, although very kind and very very cool human beings. But we want to essentially set up a board that supports this board in terms of kind of idea creation, or when we have an idea or a strategy, kind of serve as a partner, as a sounding board to see if it's a good idea or not from that specific youth perspective. I'm not saying that young people will always have the better decisions or the right decisions when it comes to strategy development or strategy implementation, but I think they can help such a board, much connected to what I said at the beginning, see things differently, serve as a kind of a learning partner throughout the process, and in essence, yes, serve as this kind of sounding board at the most senior level of the company. In this case, the company that we are considering placing this youth board in is also a media company that has in Switzerland a free newspaper. A free newspaper that, I don't know if that exists in Italy, but essentially a newspaper that sits at every you can find at every train station, bus stop.
Yes, not so much, but it exists.
Something similar now. But and then the question there is, some of the questions we're exploring is, post-pandemic, people are not commuting as much, people are not willing to share physical papers with others because you don't know if this is, I don't know, if it has a virus on the paper. So people are not excited anymore about the physical product. And at this strategic level, we are essentially hoping to understand in what area should the company invest, what new product should we build or buy. But it gives you hopefully a sense of the level at which kind of this dialogue between this youth board and this senior board would take place. This is the last slide, but again, what is the purpose of such a youth board within that company? Or what am I looking for? One, it is kind of this, back to where I started, this more ethical assumption or a belief that I think young people have a right to voice their opinion or be part of the conversation about when it comes to issues that are really crucial to them, like the future of information or news, in the sense very important for a democracy. But I do think that such a youth board can help the actual board make better decisions, better strategy, and eventually better products, or at least products that work, particularly if those products are meant for a younger audience, and maybe more kind of aspirational. I do hope that through these models, like the youth board, we find good ways to work together on issues that will help us collaboratively shape the future we are more excited about, and co-create the future we want to have. So with that, I think I leave it there, and I'm excited to see what questions you have.
Yes, that's the time for the audience. So if you get some questions, now it's the time. You may ask it in Italian if you want, or you may ask it in English as you prefer. Otherwise, I think I can start with one question, so let more time for the audience to think about. I'd like to understand more about the youth lab. You talk about a newspaper, media. So how does newspaper work? What does newspaper talk about? So what are the articles? So what the young people write, and what are the content? And how this kind of work can help researchers?
Well, two answers to that. So the newspaper, Tages-Anzeiger, is one of the largest newspapers in Switzerland. And in essence, it's not meant for youth per se. So the articles written in it are very much like the newspaper you may work at, so they're written for an older audience. But the main question this newspaper had is, it's a paid subscription model for the newspaper, and the question they had is, once young people are able and willing to pay for a newspaper, which might be at age 28, will they buy ours? And that's a big question mark, because several reasons, but one, is the product strong enough for kind of to for young people to see kind of already early on connection points that by the time they're able to buy it, that they will choose that one. So that's that in essence is the main question. And so that what we did through the youth lab is to figure out how to essentially, what does the product need to look like and how do you need to change the types of articles you write about, the structure of each article. So how do you need to change and improve the product that it feels more appealing to a current 17-year-old, but also hopefully by anticipating the needs of a 17-year-old, also understanding then what a 28-year-old might be able to more easily connect to or not. I think that was maybe your first question, though. No? Did I answer yes. it correctly?
You got a question.
Yes.
Hi, Sandra. Hello. Hi, my name is Alessandro, too. I have a comment on the last part of your presentation, which I like very much. I really like the idea of a young board, of empowering young people, believe in them. I work in the United States for quite a while, and I notice how different it is, like how they grow up faster because they have more responsibilities. They're given, society gives them more responsibilities. They can drive, they live on their own, etc. So, whereas in Italy, as you know very well, their space is very limited. So I really believe in this, in the fact that give more space, more responsibility, more power, more money to young people means having a better society. And my question was on the first part of your presentation. Do you think, or since you are a psychologist too, how do you think in your experience, in your research, social media, artificial intelligence, technology impacts on young people's minds? Meaning, you know, that's a broad topic that everyone talks about learning. Like, do they have less verbal skills? Do they develop other kind of skills, like motor skills, visual skills? Do they represent the world differently through other, because, you know, our formation was mainly through books, whereas now you have other kind of impacts, and especially about socializing and ethics. Do they socialize? Do they have different social skills, less real social skills? You know, the ikomori, whatever, in Japan. And about ethics, do they have less responsibilities? Since in the virtual world, you can say or do whatever you want and you don't have actual physical consequences. So that's my question.
Well, the answer would be how much time do we have to answer your different questions? Urs Gasser here wrote several books on the topic that I very much recommend you to read. I'm a notorious optimist, I would say, and because I love working with young people for the reasons I stated. I often see myself as kind of the bridge between young people and the adult world that sees maybe things differently or very critically. So in terms of your question, I do think the internet or digital technologies come with a lot of challenges. At all levels, from what it made us to our body and mind, to what it does to our behaviors, to how it changes maybe social norms or raises ethical questions. But I think, as an optimist, I study the challenges and the opportunities, and much of my work focuses on the opportunities because I do see a lot of advantages or positive things that are connected to digital technologies and the things young people are doing, but they are not often visible enough. And in the public discourse, they get to be neglected. So I would actually almost turn the question back to the audience, in which we have a lot of young people, to ask the question about attention or skills or morals, and do you feel, to what extent do you feel technologies are impacting those positively or negatively. So let's say in terms of skills, learning is an area I enjoy very much looking into. I can say digital skills, in essence, are becoming more and more important. So let's say it differently. When it comes to learning, we can see that digital technologies are impacting traditional learning spaces in significant ways. On one hand, they are kind of the infrastructure often through which we learn. Think about the pandemic with Zoom or Teams or any kind of other devices. But in other ways, you can also connect traditional topics with digital technologies. So think about math or any kind of science topic and the importance of data. And then you connect that to the digital realm where I share data is everywhere. So you can connect essentially data with this more traditional non-digital topic of math and do a merger of the two. In addition to that, understanding questions like data in the digital space has become more important. And so while you start with a very traditional topic like math, you end up in this digital space needing certain types of skills that are in essence very traditional, but combined are hopefully more powerful. And in terms of kind of ethical behaviors, I think the digital realm allows us in many ways to be more connected, to express ourselves in creative ways, express different parts of our identities. But it's not always a positive thing for everyone. So it comes with risks attached, risks for the individuals that are expressing themselves, risks of bullying, risks to feel like you can say and do whatever you want. So it comes with challenges as well on the ethical side. But overall, I feel like an optimist. I see many more positive answers or aspects to look into. And I'm particularly also a strong believer that it's at the intersection of the digital and the non-digital that really interesting debates can happen.
Any other question? That we got a second question.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I wonder whether you managed to observe some differences between boys and girls in your research. Whether that was a notable, whether there were notable differences between sexes.
Short answer is yes, and it depends. One, I try to not look at the world in such a binary way, but in terms of some of the implications of digital technology, I look, for instance, at expression of identity and body image questions, where we see that, for instance, often it is people that identify as women that feel maybe more pressured or more stressed to represent themselves in good ways online. I look, for instance, at questions of usage, where we see that it's often women that are more excited about social media platforms than men. I look, for instance, at questions of gaming, where we see so specific suite of technologies within the technology realm, like gaming, where we see that it's very much a boys' domain, kind of more boys are gaming than girls. So that we see a lot of differences, but in essence, I would caution that because as you saw the dots at the beginning, I look at young people globally, and these differences are not always the same in all countries. So you see some differences in Italy in terms of gender that you don't see in the US, versus very different in Latin America or Asia. So I would caution us in kind of to look at it in that way too often. And then I lost my train of thought. I'm too tired. But
Between the two, between boys and girls.
I just lost it. I'm sorry. Now I know what I was going to say. So we see clear differences in terms of gender, depending if you zoom in into specific issues or specific countries. But then overall, I think there are many things that are common, no matter what gender identity you have. So the desire to be successful in life, have a good education, find the partnership, and kind of more these pathway questions are very similar. Wanting to be well and healthy are very similar. So while there are gender differences, I think overall there are also many threats where there is no difference kind of when it comes to digital technologies. Sorry about that. Yes.
I realized that I used this very sharp distinction, sexes, it came out of my my age, my generation. Gender is much more appropriate.
Okay. We get another question here. Before the next question, so we got some time for another question more, maybe. I'd like to have questions from the young people here. I know that nobody in this room, don't get offended, please. I know that nobody in this room is inside the range between 12 and 18, but maybe you can have something, so don't be afraid. Next question.
So thank you, Sandra, for the presentation. For reasons I think that have to do with the history of the project and also some sort of the time, the focus has been very much on youth and digital technology. But maybe also kind of picking it up where you just left it towards the end of the presentation, it seems we're in 2022, and yes, there are all these technologies, yet over the past few years, it seems there have been topics that are moving young people and let them go onto the street and to really, you know, give voice and raise their voices, especially climate change, questions of sustainability, social justice in the US, now a war in Europe where questions of peace become super relevant. And so I'm wondering, many of these today's topics don't necessarily have directly to do with technology. And in your work, as you meet young people in labs and through your research, do you some sort of see a shift in emphasis where, you know, technology somehow becomes less of the topic that youth identify with for all the reasons you shared, but where it's a broader social agenda that may have less to do with technology? And would that have implications for the kind of questions you ask and for the kind of research projects you would approach next?
Yeah, thank you. Excellent question. I do think, as we have been doing this project for more than 10 years, the themes become broader and, in essence, also less digital. So to give you an example, currently we're studying the question of what is well-being? Well-being per se, not a digital question, but we are looking at well-being in a digitally connected world, 2022, where we would say technology must be playing a role in it, probably, likely, but in itself the topic is not a digital topic, and we are looking at other topics like you asked me about education. Maybe not learning and education are per se a digital topic, but obviously the connections are extremely strong. What we can say is, in part, the topics are less digital or not as obviously digital from the get-go. in part because I feel like young people no longer make that distinction about what is digital and non-digital, so it has become more complex to take the two apart. So it just becomes these big themes in life, like how do we make money and have good jobs, how do we feel well and increase our health, how do we learn, but it's because also in essence young people no longer make this distinction as much, digital is everything, that when we study the topics we have to like look at it from many different angles and take them apart and often remind ourselves that also we want to understand the role of digital within these big topics. So we're developing this new concept of well-being where we have identified 9 areas like social connections, education, economic and physical safety, mental and physical health, all non-digital per se topics, where we are now looking at the role of technology within each of these boxes. So technology merely as a platform, because you are using a chatbot, a health chatbot, to think about your physical or mental health. Could be technology as a challenge within well-being, because you're feeling like you're being too much online or not sleeping enough, or it's making you scroll all the time, so technology posing a challenge on a specific area. But it can also be technology as a positive, so it helps you in terms of well-being, connect with others, you find apps to do yoga and meditation, and so in essence the topics have become broader. They are, though, even one would think, not per se connected to digital. We live in a digitally connected world, so there are digital components that will naturally connect to it, but you have to do more work to kind of take the topic apart and look at it from all sides to fully understand all components, including the digital and non-digital. But I am surprised, excited, and curious about being very much at an Internet and Society Research Center, and that most of the topics we study right now, like well-being or digital economy or learning, are different from the early days project where it was privacy, cyberbullying, media literacy, very much attached to the digital space. So it is cool.
So we got 1 minute for the last question, if you... That one, okay. And then we can conclude.
Okay. I'm 16, so I belong to the range you trade. And my question is, I noticed that sometimes social medias divide us mostly at my age. So how to make young people able to choose the ways to use social medias and the time when to use it? Because maybe we are in social occasions and we start watching Instagram or TikTok together. How to stop this thing? Yeah, because it's quite sad.
Well, that's why we formed the whole project around it, but it's really up to us and you to create new social norms among friends. How do you want to be spending time together, and how do you want to create rules for when to take out the phone or not and look at social media or not? But maybe, and I only have a minute left, is to also, when you take it out, maybe make it a more deliberate action. So when someone takes it out, you would say, can you show me what you're looking at? Or are you looking at something cool? Can we talk about it? So maybe try to connect the two spheres a little bit more so it doesn't feel like it's just an interruption as you are with friends. So maybe that would be a recommendation. But I think it's up to us to create new social norms for how we want to be spending our time together. And I do think even on social media, there are lots of positives and cool things one can learn or do or connect with others. So I see it as, I see what the challenges are for us as a society, and that we so often feel like it's bothering us if everyone is looking at the phone. But yeah, it's, I think, up to us to create new social norms around it and to find a way forward. But thank you for your question, and I'm really, really grateful for everyone here. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Now we must conclude that. Thank you, Sandra. Thank you all. And have a nice day.